Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto Home Life Business, boat, motorcycle. Summer does a great job of telling you about all that and more. It's all at Purdy Insurance. You know, customer service means everything. They get it done. You know, they want to save you money. It may be bundles, but they do everything can to save money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Roads, 11 at 15 Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Got this note before we get to the play-by-play call of the day, then Nate Bauer. This is from Jim in San Francisco. Dear Steve, I have a somewhat random question for you. I've always enjoyed seeing the end zone and midfield logos painted on the Super Bowl field each year. Assume that the NFL hires graphic designers to plan these details for the grounds crew. Any insight into the process? Who designs the field graphics for Penn State? I'd like to see the slanted script in the end zone from the 80s and 90s for their next generation, the greatness game. Okay, so the NFL, of course, comes up with the logos, and they try to get it. The Super Bowl logo, 56, I mean, that's from the NFL graphic design group, and they just give it to the grounds crew, and they go, here's what you have. For the teams, they try to go with what the teams use in their end zone. Right? What do they use in their end zone at home? So they try to go with that. At Penn State, it's come up by the graphics design team. And the diamonds, by the way, that they go with were the diamonds that were used in the 60s and early 70s at Penn State when they do the Generations of Greatness game. And they then give it to the field staff, you know, the grounds crew, which does a great job of your statement. They're the ones that paint it on there. As for not having, he doesn't bring this up, but I'll bring it up now. Why no center field logo for Penn State? Okay. Logos kill grass. Simple as that. Now, it's no issue at SoFi Stadium. That's field turf. But logos in the center of field end up killing grass and are very tough to maintain. That's why one of the reasons Penn State doesn't do it. It's not good for the field. I hope that answered Jim's question. All right. There you go. All right, let's get to our play-by-play call of the day. Arizona State beats UCLA in an upset.
Loose ball, picked up in the corner, Watson gets rid of it, no good, and Arizona State wins it in triple overtime, beating number 3 UCLA, 87-84. What a win for the Sun Devils.
And look at all the happy people dancing on the court. Oh, my. What a game, what a night, Tempe.
Phil Walton with Dave Pasch. Dave's phenomenal. Okay, let's get to Nate Bauer. Sir, always a pleasure. Great to have you with us.
Let's start with, I want to go back to 2016. And James Franklin was speaking with a group, and he said, one of the more important things that we need to do across the board is we need to all pull the rope in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So that's what he told the group. I mean, I was there, when, you know, right, standing right next to him when he said it. Mm-hmm. And what a difference it has made. Did you get the same sense that that's what he was talking about with everything happening, right? There's no structure in college football right now. But how important it is from top to bottom that at least in this institution, everybody pulls in the same direction?
Yep. I don't think there's any doubt that Wednesday was a it worked in two ways. One, it signaled that they're as close as they've been to having that.
Yes.
Right? Between the director of the Board of Trustees, the new university president, who he said, you know, obviously it's kind of at that initial stage of the interactions, but I think that certainly he signaled some optimism there that she will be, you know, in line with that. And then on down, right? All the way to the football coach. But the second part is they're not there yet. Right? Like, so it's still a process. You know, I think one of the things that was brought up during the season and, you know, kind of as the contract talks went along in October and November was this notion that if you look at all the other successful dominant programs in college football right now, that is the commonality is that it is not just that Alabama has a strong football program. Mm-hmm. It is that the university and the institution and the community at large surrounding Alabama football is all in. They all act. That doesn't mean they completely agree on everything or that Nick Saban just points where to go and everybody follows along, but it's simply to say that there are kind of these overwhelming pillars that provide a roadmap of hey, this is the direction that the football program needs to go, and these people are all going to you know, do what it takes and be invested in seeing that success come to fruition.
Now, what makes his argument on this or his statement on this very strong, and as somebody who has stood there, I don't know, hundreds of times when he's done this, I mean, I'm not kidding now, hundreds of times, where he's up in front of his team stressing academics, that, I think, gives him additional cachet with the board, the president, and so forth, because he's stressing what the overall mission is on top of this.
I don't think there's any question. Honestly, part of what he said on Wednesday that struck me and I think has been really a part of the conversation throughout is, you know, kind of this notion that you can do all of these things that are happening without giving up your identity.
Exactly.
Without sacrificing who you are. But does that mean that Penn State as an institution, as an athletic department, and as a football program shouldn't be finding the ways that it and NIL and the transfer portal, what have you, that fit within that construct, right? And to me, like, that's the biggest... If that's the biggest thing, is just, hey, because academics are still important, because tradition is still important, how can they use those things to their advantage without selling out, without making it look like the program has transformed into something that it's not? You can keep those things in place and build on it.
Exactly. And when you have a head football coach that all the time, and I do mean all the time, is stressing the academic element to it, right? Doing that on his own. He's not, you know, there's nobody around. I mean, the board of trustees, he's not, you know, the board isn't there when he's saying this. The president isn't there. The athletic director isn't there. You know, the vice president for intercollegiate athletics is not there. He's just doing it. Well, I happen to be there when he's doing it. So he means it. I mean, it's sincere. It's not a show. And I think that really helps the cachet of it. Now let's get to another part. In the desire to keep life as amateur as possible in intercollegiate athletics, they made sure that nobody could buy any jerseys that had numbers on it. I'm not talking about Penn State. I'm talking about anywhere. Hey, we're going to sell number one. And for example, at Northwestern, it's Pat Fitzgerald's 51. All right?
Yep.
What about the possibility now that Penn State football jerseys may be available this fall, and how may that work out in terms of the student-athlete but also for the university?
Yeah, so, I mean, they teased it this morning as a partnership that they've entered into with – this is, like, a massive thing. So there's a deal with Fanatics, like the apparel – company. They don't make apparel, but they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these institutions. And so Penn State being part of that is a win, right? And honestly, it's probably how the NCAA football video game will work.
Right.
Which is
agreed.
Players have the opportunity to opt into this larger deal, and if they do, then their jersey can be sold. I think it's kind of interesting and fascinating from a Penn State perspective, in the sense that, you know, are fans going to order a player's jersey with the player's name on the back of it when that isn't what Penn State does as a football program,
right?
There are no names on the back of the jersey.
Right.
But even that, right, like for many, 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 many years, Nike sold the star player's number, right?
Yeah.
And just said it was like, oh, that's a coincidence. You know what
I mean? Yeah, I know. I always love how this used to be. Although, if you were really smart a long time ago and you bought 14 for Chuck Fusina, it became Todd Blackledge, it became John Schaefer, it became Sean Clifford.
So, the fact that Penn State is part of that now and announced that, and that will come to fruition in the fall, what strikes me as so interesting about this is the day or two, right, after Caleb Williams signed and went to and enrolled at Southern Cal,
right,
they had on their team shop autographed footballs, autographed helmets that you could purchase from Caleb Williams.
Right.
So that's within the structure of Southern Cal football.
Yep.
That's the next day.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2 days later.
Yep.
Penn State's announcement today is for the fall, right? And so, I think that there is this, it's about expediency, it's about urgency, it's about all of those things. So, like, you have to make the decision in the first place to take these steps, but then you have to do it kind of quickly. And that's what I don't think has come to fruition yet for Penn State.
Sometimes fall might mean June.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Just like, you know, magazines for the season, right? Yeah, Athlon, everybody else comes out May, June. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. The other interesting part is USC is on, I think, the same academic timetable Penn State is. So I think they started classes January 10th, same time Penn State is. But Williams is in now.
Yep.
How important is that factor? We're going to get somebody. We want him in by spring practice, but he may not commit to us till February 1st. How important is that concession to make and, you know, show a lot of confidence in your academic support group?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that has happened and you've seen with some other programs, particularly basketball comes to mind for me, where, you know, admissions and all of those things that are integral to the university operations aren't necessarily set up to handle the way these things have changed in college athletics. I think he definitely pushed on Wednesday kind of the notion that, these things are not in place currently at Penn State, and it's just about making decisions to change that so that you can enroll in the middle of the semester or a couple of weeks into the semester, because there's no telling who or how many potential transfers may have precluded Penn State really from their options this winter, right? December and the beginning of January, because the academic calendar started so soon.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, there are all of these little small hurdles that Penn State just has to decide what it wants to be. Like, is it going to cling to the model that has existed for all of these years because that's just the way it's done and the institution is prioritizing, hey, this is the way it is, we gotta, like, that's it, sorry, there's no wiggle room? Or is there going to be some flexibility here? Are we going to try to adapt to the rules as they've changed and figure out a way to make these things work?
In part because, look, at the moment, I mean, the NCAA, college football, college basketball,
right now is in need of structure because there isn't structure right now. So how do you adapt when there's no structure? That's the question that has to be answered.
Yeah, well, and to what extent are you the ones who dream up how to do it, right? Like, so much of this is, hey, are you going to do the things that someone else is doing, right? These new frontiers, mm-hmm. the NIL and the transfer board, are you, like, that's the way that the question is asked, is will you follow suit? And I think that what James Franklin is asking of everyone, right, players, the university, parents, fans, alumni, is at what point do you stop thinking in terms of following and start thinking in terms of leading? Yeah. Like, how do you set the roadmap? How do you behave and act to where other people are following you and following your example?
Right. There is, but there's that line, though, and that line is, I want to make sure we're doing this, but not crossing the line.
For sure. But I don't think, and I mean, I guess that's kind of my point, is it's demanding of minds who can think in those terms of, hey, okay, there is no model necessarily for exactly what Penn State wants to be, right? I mean, not that I'm putting it at this level, but I think the comps academically in terms of what Penn State wants to be are Michigan, Stanford to a certain extent, mm-hmm. for the athletic department as a whole, right? You, mm-hmm. you see these different institutions. Well, think about how you can maintain your identity as an institution, as a football program, as an athletics department, but still push it, still create new opportunities within the constructs that exist.
Sir, outstanding job of how you did the interview while also controlling those two wonderful children who obviously were angels in the background.
I abandoned them. I hope they're still alive. I raced up the stairs and was out of breath mid-interview because things were not going well. So I appreciate your patience. Thank you.
I would have not admitted that. I would have taken the compliment.
You know what? as long as my wife doesn't hear, and I'm assuming she's not listening, I think we'll be okay.
I mean, the reach of this show is beyond your words. All right, so thanks, Nate. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks so much.
Nate Bauer on 3.com, Frank Bodani next half hour, and probably a pretty good Matt Catrillo rant. I mean, believe me, anything can happen on that, I mean, with Mount Vesuvius, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
In an ever-changing world, one thing you can always count on is the service at Purdy Insurance. Hi, this is Season. While the world is constantly changing, Purdy Insurance is dedicated to providing you with the highest level of service to protect you, your family, and your business. Give us a call today at 570-286-5855. Go to our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Final 10 seconds of this first Pro Bowl quarter. Mahomes with a sidearm, and he's intercepted. That's Antoine Winfield of the Buccaneers. Little head fake, fake the pitch, and now cuts it back for the touchdown. And the first quarter will come to an end on a pick six.
I hope they never play that game again. I saw 5 minutes of it yesterday, and I said, this is disgusting. It's not football. I was done. I said, I saw 5 minutes. I went, you got to be kidding me.
See, I would have watched more, but I had Bucknell basketball yesterday, so.
Would have watched more of that?
Probably. I've always been in the very big minority that I always have liked the Pro Bowl. I've always enjoyed the Pro Bowl. Now, that particular game yesterday probably would be one of my least favorite, but I still like the Pro Bowl.
They need to end it. I mean, it's just, they're not playing.
They're just not. They're not playing. I mean, the only play I saw in the game was Leonard picking off the pass and running it back for a touchdown. The kid from the Colts. I'm like, oh, and everybody's like, ah, oh, they reached out, like, hit him. The heck. That game needs to end. I mean, of course, you're into the halftime show at the Super Bowl. I won't watch that.
I am not watching this year's halftime show.
I haven't watched that in decades.
This year's halftime show is going to be...
Decades.
Terrible.
Decades. Decades I have not watched it. And I've been... It is one of the best decisions television-wise I've ever made.
I will probably lose brain cells watching this year's halftime show, so I'm not going to watch it.
Bring back the Grambling Band. They're great. Or how about this? Get the Stanford Band to perform. Perfect. Right? 12 minutes in, out, done.
Anybody else but all these stinking rappers? I mean, come on.
Well, I'm just saying, they all are. I mean, I guess Katy Perry performed at it, Madonna. I mean, I didn't watch them either. I'm like, I don't want to watch that. Bring out the band.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle. Maybe they bundle, but they'll do everything they can to save you money and make sure that you are fully insured. And they'll update those policies. They're the pros' pros, where customer service means everything. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Any complaints on your part before we move forward?
I'm good. I'm good, honestly.
Tomorrow, by the way, Matt Leon on the show. We're going to talk about Ben Simmons. Trade deadline is Thursday. Are you going to be watching the Winter Olympics tonight?
I will watch some, but I also would like to watch Super Bowl opening night. So I'll be flipping back and forth a little bit.
Super Bowl opening night.
Yeah, I always love Super Bowl media day.
Well, the Bengals aren't even there.
I know it's not as last 2 years haven't been as good because it's been virtual, but I still enjoy it. Anything Super Bowl related, I enjoy. So I'm going to watch some of that tonight.
Oh my goodness, you couldn't give me money to watch that. there'd be certain sums I'd turn down. No, I'm not doing that for that. Oh, goodness. Really?
Yeah, why not?
Why? Even a better question, why? mercy me. That's awful. Yeah. That, the halftime show, yikes. Just get to the game. I feel bad for the figure skater for the United States that got COVID. Now they're going to put him into quarantine. And all the stories out of quarantine are not good. I know you're shocked. I know you're shocked. Anybody with a brain is shocked. Not good. Why are they at this? Why are they here? Let's start with this basic one. Let's start with a place that has snow. Let's start with a place that has snow. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's actually been a kind of a rough 24 hours for the U.S. You had Joe go down.
The whole thing has been.
Well.
The whole thing.
That goes without saying.
Six silver medals. They have no gold medals.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening. Michaela Schifrin, I guess I saw a note she fell down.
Yeah, that's all I was going to get to, the alpine skier. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, man, so far so good. Yeah. There's no fans there. Like, it's just...
I'm just glad no real bad protests or anything have broken out. That was my
protests.
Big concern.
Who would dare protest there? One of the goals should be to try and get home. All right, let's.
More or less from spectators trying to get in, not necessarily from the athletes. But either way, I'm glad it's been peaceful so far. Yeah,
there. In 2008, none of that happened. Believe me, that right now, because of COVID, let's start with that. It's, you know, I don't know whether it's being used as an excuse or not. Because of COVID, that country is locked down right now. I mean, they are locked down. They can't go anywhere because they're trying to. They have, I believe, a COVID zero policy.
Correct. Yes.
So, protest? Like, walking outside to get the paper. Oh, that's right. They don't have those either. All right. They got a few problems there.
Nothing would surprise me anymore. That's all I'm saying.
Ooh, I don't know. I would be shocked. I really would be. Oof. I know that, look, Oslo bid and then pulled out. Then it came down to Kazakhstan and Beijing. Kazakhstan's not the greatest place either. But the vote was 44-40. I mean, I'm hoping that when we get to Paris in 24, everything's wide open and happy, and I hope when we get to Italy in 26, everything's wide open and happy. You know? Kind of get... We need to get back to, you know, how life was. And these games are not, these Olympic games, the number of people, the audience has been cut almost in half from 4 years ago. You know, some of it's on tape, that's not good because of the time change, and it's like, then there are other issues you're dealing with, and you breathe the wrong way, I don't know. And like I said, the stories that you get put into quarantine there, the stories coming out of quarantine don't paint a great picture. You know, in terms of food, treatment, everything like that. That's not good. But who's the head of the Olympic Committee there?
Thomas Bach.
He painted this rosy picture of like,
yeah.
Hey, they have the
He's
real
a dope, too, by the
they
way.
They have the real Olympic spirit here. I'm going, I'm sitting there going, you actually said that?
I thought his speech to declare the games open during the ceremonies was completely nauseating.
I did not watch it. I have not seen the second of the games.
Yeah.
None. Zero.
Yeah, I definitely put him in the dope category too. As well as everybody else in the IOC.
Because he's not from Philly, or
no, because he's a corrupt dope. That's what I call him. Everybody is on the IOC.
He speaks highly of your family. All right. Let's bring in Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Hello, sir. Welcome. Always great.
Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the outstanding Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Sir, welcome.
Steve, hope the week's starting off well for you.
Yeah, it seems to be starting off okay.
Great.
So let's start a little bit with Penn State football recruiting. They get the commitment last week from Vega Ione, who had been committed for 6 months to Washington. They change coaching staffs. He opens up his recruitment. Penn State gets him, and then they get the transfer from Cornell.
Yes, on top
of
that.
I'm just finishing my story here as you guys called me in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just committed.
So, yeah. What are we seeing after seeing the class they signed in December, then the late signing period, now this? What are you seeing, Frank?
Well, and also the commit they have on the offensive line for 2023.
Right.
Well, four of them are.
Which I'm not allowed to talk about.
Right. We won't. Yeah, right. That's fine.
You can mention all the names you want.
Yeah, yeah,
I just have to sit here and listen.
Got it. Well, I mean, so Phil Troutwine's demise is a little overstated, I guess. But, he comes in and doesn't have his own guys to work with on the offensive line. New offensive coordinator, some struggles there. And, hey, here's the deal. Offensive lineman, probably the toughest position to grade and to figure out what's going to happen. And, it's tough. Some guys just don't pan out, but this is looking good for Penn State. They needed help right away. They get the transfer kid that they really want in Hunter Norzad, and I think that's bodes well for a team that's, they're losing, three starters last year, so they need to replace guys.
Right.
He's proven, too.
Right. And, he's proven. Just like Eric Wilson was proven when he came here, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is that, the offensive line, it takes time to develop. And I'll give you a name, the late Adam Gress. Remember how Adam finally got his chance to start here and how well he played his senior year? And, Frank, I'm telling you, I watched him practice for 3 years and never thought he'd see the light of day. And all of a sudden, boom, the light came on, and all of a sudden he became really good. So you're right, it takes time, and that's one of the toughest areas to have patience with, because you have to have patience when you're developing a lineman.
Right, and even these guys, we don't have to name names, but even the high-profile recruits that Penn State is getting verbal commitments from, they're not going to be able to help right away. So this is good, but it's not going to be saving the team, so to speak, this season or maybe even next season. That's why someone like Norzad is so important. And to see what the transfer possibilities, Penn State never was able to do that before, right? They were never able to find a guy who had proven himself even at a different level in Adam quickly like that.
Right. No, exactly. And this is, the portal is so interesting. And
right.
What I've found is interesting is that, for example, he's from Cornell. Eric, of course, came in from Harvard. We're seeing a lot, several Ivy League players getting one last shot at Power Five schools at a variety of positions. How interesting do you find that?
Well, I think there are probably always, these guys were always high achievers on the football field, too. It's just that we never paid much attention to them before until now.
Right.
And now they have options to go elsewhere. It's not just all of a sudden, hey, we were underrated, overlooked, we're just going to do the best we can in the Ivy League. Hey, now they got a chance to shine at a high, a national TV level, a national program level where people are going to notice them. Great for them. Right. Plus you get both sides of it. They're going to upheld their end of the work part of it, the study part of it. No problems there, right?
Yeah. Nope. I don't think that's going to be an issue. All right. Now the next part is name, image, and likeness. Penn State was one of the first. I think it was four schools. I think Oklahoma, LSU, Penn State. Can't remember the fourth one. To have this deal with fanatics on uniforms. This is something that always was a touchy subject for recent years. What do you think, A, it means potentially for players, but B, what about the fans and their ability now to get those jerseys?
It's more opportunities for everybody, and I think the winners are going to be the programs that adjust and do it the right way, but quickly, and take advantage of it. Look at Texas A&M. They went all in, and as far as everybody knows legally, but they're helping get the talent into their school. And I think James Franklin was doing the best he could. Boy, he's a master at doing this, talking about what he wants without really, you know, coming down on anybody. But he said, you know, we got to be bold and we got to be aggressive. And it's not just facilities, it's with NIL. And because it's gonna change the landscape from, you mentioned fans and their availability, mm-hmm. but it's gonna change the landscape of college football. And you got to be able to deal with it and use it to your advantage, because you will get left behind. I mean, that's what it seems like. Unless there's going to be rules and enforcing this in a whole different way we don't see, you got to be on top of this. And Penn State, you think is going to do it, but I think they have some catching up to do.
Well, here's one that's ultra aggressive. People wouldn't think of BYU. I mean, BYU's being ultra-aggressive with this to the point where they have either a benefactor or benefactors. They're essentially picking up walk-ons' tuition, which means instead of having 85 scholarship players, technically they can have an unlimited number.
Well, they're smart. And look at Grambling and some of the other schools. I mean, The powers that be, the Ohio States and Alabama's, of course, they're going to be able to benefit because of who they are. But schools that didn't have that same type, if you're creative, if you get on this and you find ways to market yourself and make people say, hey, this is why you should come here now. Look at what you can do for not just yourself but your family. They're going to steal recruits. I think kids are going to want to come and play. If it can benefit themselves, right? I mean, pretty simple, I think. If you have enough developmental parts in process and, you know, in play, that's...
Well, exactly. And look, there are certain boosters, for example, that do not care about return. They just want to win games, right? There's other entities. Let's take Dr. Pepper, for example, with DJ Uiagalelei of Clemson. What was their return on having him be a spokesperson for them? Not very strong. I mean, I don't know if you see he has a lasting deal with them or not. We'll see. But like normally with an entity like that, they want a return on the investment.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, so now let's get to the Michigan thing. Josh Gattis leaves to go to Miami, makes a lateral move. We already know McDonald went back to Baltimore, but nobody was surprised by that because, you know, Wink Martindale got fired. He'd been with Baltimore. Let's not pretend Jim Harbaugh, I want to be at Michigan forever. That's because that's his only option. He wanted that Vikings job. You don't interview for 8 hours and not want the job. I mean, Frank.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, I just think for Michigan, the whole thing's a bad look.
Well, sure it is. I mean, and especially after you finally got kind of toward the top of the hill.
Yes.
Right? After every year of people saying you underachieved, you finally got to the place where your fan base and everybody's like, yeah, this is what we've been expecting. And now you have a little bit of disarray. But I mean, maybe it's just another sign of it's the world we're living in sports is moving fast and it's changing. And I don't know if what we're seeing there is going to be much different than you see anywhere else. Just a little more publicity because it's Jim Harbaugh, and you know, publicity kind of just draws to the guy. But
I know he is, and
you know, Josh didn't get the coordinator job at Penn State. It seems like so he wanted to go elsewhere. Good for him.
Yeah,
he's not maybe getting the right look that he thought he would as the head coach. So he's going to leave, and that's just not everybody does it that way. But I mean, that's just part of the business.
I mean,
I think that kind of stuff's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah, well, it's interesting though. It's a lateral move. You know, you just won the Broyles Award, top assistant, and that's what strikes me is the lateral. Now it's a lateral move to a head coach who is a defensive-minded guy.
Well, maybe he sees a path. He wants to be a head coach and be it at the right place. Maybe he sees this as his best path to help him do it, and maybe he decided Michigan was not anymore. Maybe that's all.
And then there's Auburn, and I don't want to get into what's being alleged off the field because I have no idea what's going on with that.
But
decisions are made sometimes where you just sit back, and the moment the decision is made, it's baffling.
and from 30,000 feet. And I'm sitting there when Gus Malzahn was let go. It's not like he'd never beaten Saban. He'd beaten him three times in state. And they give him $21 million to hire this guy, and it never made sense to hire this guy. What did you think?
When you're a team like, you know, Auburn is a little like Penn State and maybe regarded as like a upper-tier team in the best, one of the two best leagues, in the, you could say, in the country, but yet they're not Alabama, and Penn State's maybe to some not quite Ohio State, but they can contend and they can be there and they can beat those teams. And those hires, I mean, the fan bases are, you know, rabid. Stability, you know, I think when Penn State hired James Franklin, they looked at somebody who they, at least on his end, thought this guy is going to commit to here and be stable and do it the way we want to do it. So you have to identify the right person for your fit. And I think that's way hard to do. How about that?
it is hard to do. There's obviously pressure from boosters, right? You know, got to win more. I mean, I cited, for example, Phil Martelli, because Phil's going to be here tomorrow, right, at St. Joe's. Now, he'd been there a long time, but he already had on his team at St. Joe's Jared Bynum, okay? Bones mm-hmm. Highland was coming in the incoming recruiting class. Akeem Hart was coming in the incoming recruiting class. And they blew him up. So Bynum, who had been a freshman, transfers to Providence at 32 yesterday. Hart goes to Maryland, starts. Bones Highland goes to VCU, starts, and is a first-round pick in the NBA. St. Joe's, since they blew him up, 6-26, 5-15, 10-11. Nice move.
Well, there's and who are the people doing the hiring at that time at your school, and what's their future? You know, what's their thought process?
Right.
Because people want to win right away, but you know, how do you do that? And do you go? Then how do you gauge who the next young hot candidate? How are they gonna be, not just the first year when they get their recruiting bump, but how are they gonna be in year 3, 4, and 5? And how many guys can you name that go to programs like that, like at Virginia Tech, and they do well right away, or they do well enough, but it doesn't hold.
Right.
And people aren't patient anymore. I mean, what patience is there even at those programs where they had sometimes had coaches for a long time? There's no patience.
Right. It's just
nope.
And the part about the Harsin thing is that when he was hired, like, I know he was at Arkansas State, but like from Boise after 7 years to the SEC, it just didn't seem like it fit.
I don't think Joe Moorhead fit necessarily where he was going. He's a great coach and a great guy, but is that the easiest fit for your big time head coaching job? I don't know if that's the right fit. I don't know if, and that's nothing against him.
No,
I
mean, and they gave him 2 years.
Right. I mean, he didn't have enough time to turn really anything around, even if it is a better fit than we think. But.
It's interesting. I know these are all hard decisions, but it sure is interesting. We sit back and say, yeah, I remember when Phil got blown up, I was like, that makes no sense. When Brian Harsin got hired at Auburn, I thought, that makes no sense. But I'm from 30,000 feet, so what do I know, Frank? All right.
Well, you know how to pronounce all these names.
So far, that part I'm usually pretty good at, which is
Tremendous at that. Kudos to you with all your practice, too. Good luck this week.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Frank, you're the best. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Take care today.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.